Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
I am a child who receives First Communion in Vilno and afterwards drinks cocoa served by zealous Catholic ladies. I am an old man who remembers the day in June. The ecstasy of the sinless, white tablecloth, and the sun on vases filled with peonies. Qu'as-tu fait de ta vie? Voices call in various languages gathered in your wanderings through two continents. What did you do with your life? What did you do? Slowly, cautiously, now when destiny is fulfilled, I enter the scenes of the bygone time. Of my century, in which and not in any other, I was ordered to be born, to work, and to leave a trace.
Hello, this is Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. That was Nobel laureate Czesław Miłosz reading from his autobiographical poem Capri. Miłosz died in August of this year at the age of 93. Today's show is a tribute to the great poet whose career, spanning 7 decades, is among the longest and most prolific in literary history. He was in his early 20s when he published his first volume of poetry, A Poem on Frozen Time. His final book of poems, Second Space, is published this month by the Echo Press. In 1998, Claremont McKenna College hosted an international festival honoring Miłosz. Organized by McKenna professor Robert Fagan, this gathering of world poets and scholars included Irish Nobel Prize laureate Seamus Heaney and American poets Robert Haas and Jane Hirschfield, who were participants in Bookworm's 1998 series A Month of Miłosz. Today's show is composed of selections from those 4 shows which were originally recorded at the McKenna Conference. Robert Haas, former poet laureate of America, is the author of the National Book Award-winning collection of poems Sun Under Wood, published by the Echo Press. At the McKenna Conference, we sat down to discuss Miłosz. I asked him how he knew where to begin translating, given the vast range and legendary brilliance of Miłosz's work over the decades, the early poems of catastrophe, the haunting poems of World War II, the bitter years of exile after the war, the philosophical poems, the astonishing tenderness of the late poems.
I started because there was one poem of his that I'd read a lot about that had not been translated. And we had lived in the same town for some years. We're
Berkeley?
Neighbors in Berkeley. And I'd had a couple of friends who'd studied with him. But he was a figure, I guess, so intimidating to me that I had never really approached him. And then it happened that we got to meeting and talking, and he asked me what I thought about the translation of his poems. So we fell into a conversation on this subject, and then I said, does a translation exist of a poem called The World, which was written during the Nazi occupation of Warsaw, which is was then and is now one of the most famous and crucial poems of the war years, European poems of the war years. And I'd read about it and I hadn't seen it. And he said, well, no, it hasn't been translated. It can't be translated. It's one of those poems that's not translatable. And I said, well, does a paraphrase exist? Could I give it a try? And he said, oh, no, 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 no. Then an American literary magazine, wonderful magazine of that period, the middle 1970s, called Ironwood, wanted to do a special issue on Miłosz. And the editor approached me and asked me if I would write something. And I said, what I'd really like to do is let him give me a chance to do a version of this poem. And at that point, he relented, and I went to work on that poem.
Miłosz's cycle of poems, The World, has a subtitle. Miłosz calls it a naive poem. Written during the Nazi occupation of Warsaw, The World recalls Blake's songs of innocence and casts a radiant glow of mythic remembrance. The Path is the first poem in the cycle. The translation is a collaboration between Robert Haas and poet laureate Robert Pinsky with the advice of Czesław Miłosz. The World, a naive poem. The Path. Down where the green valley opens wider, along the path with grass blurring its border, through an oak grove just broken into flower, children come walking home from school together. In a pencil case with a lid that slides open, bits of bread roll around with stumps of crayon, and the penny hidden away by all children for spring and the first cuckoo in the garden. The girl's beret and her brother's school cap bob as they walk above the fringe of bushes. A jay screams, hopping in a treetop. Over the trees, clouds drift in long ridges. Now, past the curve, you can see the red roof. Father leans on his hoe in the front garden, then bends down to touch a half-opened leaf. From his tilled patch, he can see the whole region. During the cycle, the children venture out into the world and become lost. This poem is called Fear. Father, where are you? The forest is wild. The bushes sway as if they move themselves. The adder lilies look like poisoned fire. Under our feet are the dens of wolves. Where are you, Father? The night has no end. From now on, darkness will reign forever. Our bread is bitter, it's hard as stone. In this place, travelers die of hunger. The breath of the terrible beast is nearer, hot on our faces. It smells like blood. Where are you? Why do you have no pity, Father, for your children lost in this dark wood? Father finds and comforts the children, but you can feel the horror of war and genocide just beneath the tenderness of Miłosz's lyric poetry. The World concludes with the sun, a statement of spiritual redemption through aesthetic accomplishment. The sun. All colors come from the sun, and it does not have any particular color, for it contains them all. And the whole earth is like a poem, while the sun above represents the artist. Whoever wants to paint the variegated world, let him never look straight up at the sun, or he will lose the memory of things he's seen. Only burning tears will stay in his eyes. Let him kneel down, lower his face to the grass, and look at light reflected by the ground. There he will find everything we have lost, the stars and the roses, the dusks and the dawns. That was selections from Czesław Miłosz's The World. Robert Haas now continues.
Suddenly, out of nowhere, he received the Nobel Prize in 1980. Suddenly, there was great interest in his poetry in English, and suddenly I saw that there was this immense body of poetry by this man who was not only a great poet, but who, for good or ill, had been through so much of the history of the 20th century, and I wanted to know what was there. And that was how I fell into what became 15 or 20 years of collaboration with him on the translation of his poetry.
When you say that he had seen most of the history of the 20th century, what in fact do you mean?
Well, listeners need to imagine this almost fantastic Polish story. Miłosz was born in 1911 in Lithuania, when Lithuania was Polish in culture and a part of Russia. Miłosz's father was an engineer attached to the Russian army. His mother came from an old Polish-Lithuanian family. His father was purely Polish. The towns were a mix of Russian, Polish, Lithuanian, Yiddish, Bielorussian, Ukrainian, because in its way, that area had been a kind of model for a multicultural and diverse, wasn't a republic, it was a duchy, but it was the nearest thing to a multicultural state in Europe, perhaps from the 14th century to the 18th. In the countryside, it was a world of settled Polish manners. And on one of them, his grandfather's, Miłosz grew up. By the time he was 12 and 13, the Russian Revolution was literally flowing through his parents' garden as the Red Army came sweeping into Lithuania, from which it was repelled.
That was Robert Haas. This is Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm. Today's show is a tribute to Nobel laureate poet Czesław Miłosz, who died this August. This is Miłosz reading his poem The Blacksmith Shop at a 1998 Lannan reading in Los Angeles.
I returned to Lithuania, to my native place, after 52 years. And then I stood at the place where there was, in my childhood, blacksmith shop. And this is a poem about that. I like the bellows operated by rope, a hand or foot pedal, I don't remember which, but that blowing and the blazing of the fire, and a piece of iron in the fire held there by tongs, red, softened for the anvil, beaten with a hammer, bent into a horseshoe, thrown in a bucket of water, sizzle, steam, and horses, each to be shod, tossing their manes, and in the grass by the river, plowshares, sledge runners, harrows waiting for repair. At the entrance, my bare feet on the dirt floor. Here, gusts of heat. At my back, white clouds. I stare and stare. It seems I was called for this, to glorify things, just because they are.
Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney and I discussed the blacksmith shop.
The poet is remembering the blacksmith shop. And the child is there. He remembers the things lying around, the harrows and the old farm machinery. He remembers his feet on the clay floor. He remembers the fire. It's autobiographical, clearly. This is a memory of a specific blacksmith shop in Lithuania. But there is a sense that Miłosz is remembering for us all, for the species almost. And the poem opens out at the end from autobiographical remembrance. And beautiful as that is, it has been in the poem, there comes this calm, tender, sure statement about what poetry is. And he says, "It seems I was called for this, to glorify things just because they are."
I wanted to ask you about the quality of memory that goes on there, both in your own and in Miłosz's memories of childhood.
I respond very much to that lucid child's eye view, the ability he has to pull back, as I would say in cinematic terms. He has ability to be to view the thing with a telescopic lens from a distance, but also in close up. It's memory, remembering in the etymological sense, putting the world together again, putting the member, remembering it, resurrecting it. There's a phrase in the that I learned when I was at school about the the body which is resurrected, when all tears will be washed away and the resurrection will come, the kind of body we will have, the technical term was a glorified body. And I think when Miwash remembers things, they are glorified, as he said in his little poem about the blacksmith shop, to give glory to things just because they are. These are phrases that are very rarely used in relation to contemporary poetry anywhere anymore. The embarrassment in the face of the radiant and the glorious that we experience is, we've been, it's kind of almost a learned response by now. But that's another great good thing that Miloš's poetry does. It banishes those learned responses. It says, don't be embarrassed.
This is Michael Silverblatt on Bookworm. I had the great pleasure of talking with Sheshwa Miwosh himself. I asked him to select a poem to read. He chose Secretaries, written in Berkeley in 1975. This is Sheshwa Miwosh.
I am no more than a secretary of the invisible thing that is dictated to me and a few others. Secretaries, mutually unknown, we walk the earth without much comprehension, beginning a phrase in the middle or ending it with a comma. And how it all looks when completed is not up to us to inquire. We won't read it anyway.
Thank you. How does it feel to be the object of three straight days of tribute?
Yeah, of course, it's very rare in one's life to have such a tribute, such a thing. My first reaction is to pour a big, big vodka and drink.
American poet Robert Haas.
He snuck into Warsaw, which meant that he spent the next 7 years, 6 years, right at the center of the horror of the Nazi occupation of Eastern Europe and the extermination of the European Jews, which is a story that people know. Part of the story that people don't always know is that an enormous number of Poles were also exterminated. I should say about Miłosz in those years that he wrote poetry in the underground while he worked as a teamster, hauling books back and forth from one library to another, which was the kind of job most of the Polish writers had. They refused to work in any way in the cultural apparatus serving Nazi propaganda, so they did that kind of work. When it looked like the Russian army was about to invade Warsaw, people in the underground who were in contact with the Polish government in exile in London arranged a pre-established time when the Poles in the underground would come out onto the streets and fight the Nazis as the Russians were advancing across the river into the city, so that there would be a Polish government of sorts in place when the Russians arrived. This was supposedly coordinated with the Russian army. The signal was given. Young Poles with bottles full of gasoline, handmade guns, stolen guns, went into the streets, and the Russian army waited on the other side of the river while the German army killed 250,000 Poles. It took 3 or 4 days. The signal was given for the German army to retreat, and as a final act of retribution, they demolition squads destroyed the central city of Warsaw, the old city, building by building and block by block.
This is Robert Haas reading Czesław Miłosz's poem Dedication, written for the dead of the Warsaw Uprising.
Dedication. You whom I could not save, listen to me. Try to understand this simple speech as I would be ashamed of another. I swear there is in me no wizardry of words. I speak to you with silence, like a tree or a cloud. What strengthened me for you was lethal. You mixed up farewell to an epoch with the beginning of a new one. Inspiration of hatred with lyrical beauty. Blind force with accomplished shape. Here is a valley of shallow Polish rivers and an immense bridge going into white fog. Here is a broken city, and the wind throws the screams of gulls on your grave when I am talking with you. What is poetry which does not save nations or people? A connivance with official lies. A song of drunkards whose throats will be cut in a moment. Reading for sophomore girls. That I wanted good poetry without knowing it. That I discovered late its salutary aim. In this, and only this, I find salvation. They used to pour millet on graves, or poppy seeds, to feed the dead who would come disguised as birds. I put this book here for you, who once lived, so that you should visit us no more. Warsaw, 1945.
Robert Haas, reading Dedication by Czesław Miłosz. Thank you very much, Bob.
After World War II, Miłosz was appointed Poland's cultural attaché to the West, living first in Washington, D.C., and then in Paris. In 1953, he published The Captive Mind, his nonfiction book about the lies inherent in totalitarianism. Scorned by both the left and the right, Miłosz meagerly supported himself in Paris as a freelance writer and translator. In 1960, he accepted a position at UC Berkeley as a professor of Slavic languages. He became a citizen and lived in relative obscurity in the Bay Area until he was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1980. American poet Jane Hirschfield's recent book of poems, The October Palace, is published in paperback by Harper Perennial. When she was living in the Bay Area, she enjoyed a friendship with Miłosz lasting more than a decade.
I met him through our mutual friends, Bob Hess and Brenda Hillman. So I met him socially, and I was astonished, amazed, and thrilled when one day, rather out of the blue, the phone rang, and he invited me to dinner.
You know, wonderful.
To have the person who you consider the greatest poet alive on earth call you up and invite you to dinner is an extraordinary thing. When Bob and Brenda invited me to the picnic that he and his wife Carol were first at, they actually said, "Please talk to Czesław. Nobody ever talks to Czesław. You know, we're all so in awe of him that apparently in previous years he and Carol had sat on the grass in the picnic in regal solitude. And so, in fact, they called on my compassion to get past what I think for all of us is a really natural shyness in the presence of greatness.
Part of the graciousness of this chain that has connected Miłosz to American poetic life is that Haas has spent a good deal of his career
translating. Czesław, helping him become known.
And they're beautiful translations, and it's not just Haas, it's Robert Pinsky and Leonard Nathan,
Lillian Valley. Many people have enabled us English speakers to understand the words of a Polish poet.
This is Jane Hirschfield reading Winter by Czesław Miłosz.
Winter. The pungent smells of a California winter, grayness and rosiness, an almost transparent full moon. I add logs to the fire, I drink, and I ponder. Iniwava, the news item said, at age 70, died Alexander Rimkiewicz, poet. He was the youngest in our group. I patronized him slightly, just as I patronized others for their inferior minds, though they had many virtues I couldn't touch. And so I am here, approaching the end of the century and of my life, proud of my strength, yet embarrassed by the clearness of the view. Avant-gardes mixed with blood, the ashes of inconceivable arts, an omnium gatherum of chaos. I pass judgment on that, though marked myself. This hasn't been the age for the righteous and the decent. I know what it means to beget monsters and to recognize in them myself. You, moon, you, Alexander, fire of cedar logs. Waters close over us, a name lasts but an instant. Not important whether the generations hold us in memory. Great was that chase with the hounds for the unattainable meaning of the world. And now I am ready to keep running when the sun rises beyond the borderlands of death. I already see mountain ridges in the heavenly forest where, beyond every essence, a new essence waits. You, music of my late years, I am called by a sound and a color which are more and more perfect. Do not die out, fire. Enter my dreams, love. Be young forever, seasons of the earth.
Jane Hirschfield, reading Winter.
After the death of his wife, Carol, in 2002, Miłosz moved back to Poland, where he lived in Krakow, and continued to write every day until his death this August. Second Space, his final book of poems, was just published by Echo Press. This poem, If There Is No God, is from Second Space. If there is no God, not everything is permitted to man. He is still his brother's keeper, and he is not permitted to sadden his brother by saying there is no God. That was If There Is No God by Czesław Miłosz, translated from the Polish by the author and Robert Haas. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. Production assistance from Alan Howard, Jennifer Swadek, and Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com, keyword Bookworm. Copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.